The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So a little thread from the question, finding our way to some deeper kinds of happiness or openness and then finding ourselves contracted again. And you know, happiness is the theme of the talk. And happiness is, it's a pretty universal wish in our species, probably in all species, if there's, you know, that wish for well-being, that movement to well-being, even if it's not a conscious wish in other species, you know, that beings wish to be happy, safe, healthy, protected. And when we talk about the practice a lot and we talk about this, you know, what the Buddha taught, you know, he taught there's suffering, there's a cause of suffering, there's an end of suffering, and there's a path leading to the end of suffering. And on the face of it, it doesn't sound like happiness is in there, right? And we can kind of get a little lost, or not lost, but we can get a little emphasizing, focused on suffering, struggle. How can I let this go? We get little tastes of happiness, but then it's like, well, how do I get that back? And this is a problem. So we kind of orient around the struggle, the suffering, and how do I get rid of this? Or how do I let this go? And we can sometimes lose track of the fact that actually, what the Buddha was looking for was happiness. The ending of suffering, the ending of struggle is really a very deep kind of happiness. And this kind of happiness is not, it's not so obvious to us, actually, until we begin to taste it, until we begin to see a release such as the one that was described a few minutes ago. Until we begin to get a sense of that, it may not be quite so obvious what it is that we're headed towards in this practice. So I'd like to explore happiness a little bit, our usual way of thinking about happiness, and then a whole bunch of different kinds of happinesses, different ways that we can connect with happiness in our lives. Our usual understanding of happiness before we meet a teaching such as this one of letting go, our usual approach to happiness is not letting go, but getting things, having things. We'd like to construct our world to have the nice things in our lives, to have relationships that make us feel good, to be in situations where we're praised and acknowledged. So we'd like, that's what we think of as happiness, having nice things around us, having people who admire us, respect us, and tell us that they admire us and respect us around us. Having people praise us, having status, this kind of thing is what we, you know, kind of are going for. And it's what our society is priming us for. It's very much the direction of our culture, that the message that we're given, this is what will make you happy. You just watch the TV commercials, you know, it's like that's the message we get over and over again. This is what will make you happy. And this message, this kind of happiness of having what we want, it actually is a kind of a trap in a way. It traps us because we end up thinking that, you know, our view, our belief is around that having things, constructing the world, creating the environment that feels good is the way to happiness. And when we don't succeed all the time, when we're not able to do that all the time, and it is not possible to continuously throughout a life construct that situation for ourselves. It is just not possible. And when we manage to find ourselves in those spaces where it's not working, we believe we're to blame. We believe that we're failing. Rather than it just being kind of part of the natural course of events, that of course it's not possible for somebody to have things exactly the way they want them all the time, we feel like we failed. So it's kind of a setup for us to put our happiness or to look for happiness in this way. The other piece of that kind of happiness, it's often tied to material things, it's tied to status, it's tied to our worth in our jobs, all kinds of things like that. And, you know, there's a limited amount of material things to go around. There's a limited amount of certain jobs of certain status to go around. And so in some ways, and at one point, I had the recognition that the way I thought about happiness was that it was a zero-sum game. That it meant, if I was happy, it meant somebody else was losing out on something. And if somebody else was happy, it meant I was losing out on something. And there's some truth to that in respect to the way that we typically think of happiness. There's only so much material stuff to go around. So one reflection the Buddha offers on this theme of happiness, he says, if by giving up a lesser happiness one could experience greater happiness, a wise person would renounce the lesser to behold the greater. So this brings the question of, okay, so if this way that we typically think of finding happiness is perhaps not the best way to go about it, what are some other ways? What are some other kinds of happiness? So I'd like to explore different kinds of happiness, different ways that we can find happiness in our lives, some more deeply satisfying kinds of happiness. And I'm kind of going through these in levels, you know, that starting with the kind of happiness that's maybe most closely connected to the kind of happiness that we are familiar with. But it's not... I guess I would call it the least kind of happiness that's possible. And then moving to deeper and deeper, more satisfying kinds of happiness as I go through the discussion. So the first kind of happiness that's kind of connected to this happiness of having what we want is the happiness of sense pleasure, the happiness of having pleasant experience in our bodies. Having good food, comfortable environment, nice things to look at, nice people to be with, that kind of thing. So there is a happiness to this kind of sense pleasure, and the Buddha acknowledges this. He says, yeah, this is a happiness. Having pleasant experience brings happiness. His suggestion for us is that we see, what is that happiness about? What is the kind of way that happiness is put together in our minds? Some of it has to do with the having of the pleasant experience. That is inherent in pleasant experience in a way that it brings a little bit of that sense of ease, perhaps. You know, just thinking about the distinction between having something, you know, being in an environment, for instance, being in an environment where the temperature is 72 degrees versus being in an environment where the temperature is 10 degrees below zero. You know, the body is more at ease when there's that pleasant sense environment of the temperature. Minus 10 degrees below zero is not a pleasant environment for the body. So there's a kind of, you know, ease that's very natural. That's a form of happiness. But another part of the happiness that typically comes with sense pleasure that we don't actually notice so much is that because often our having of pleasant things is tied up with wanting them, there's another piece to the pleasantness of having what we want. And this is a little less obvious. When we want something, when there's something out there that we want, we're kind of projected into the future thinking about how, oh, that's going to be nice, you know, that's going to be good, I'm going to get that thing. So there's a kind of sense of anticipation. And that's a part of the happiness, is this mental construct that's going on. It's like, yeah, that's going to be wonderful. There's also something else that's happening that may not be so obvious because we're caught in that mental idea or fantasy of having that wonderful thing, that anticipation. So we're caught in that anticipation. And what we're not noticing is that there's a feeling of lack because we want something and we don't have it. Wanting itself, when we want something, it produces a sense of dissatisfaction in the not having. And so that feeling of wanting, the feeling of lack, what we've learned through our lives is that when I get the thing that I want, that feeling of lack goes away. And that feels good for that feeling of lack to go away. So actually a big part of the happiness of sense pleasure comes because we get what we want and that wanting goes away. The unpleasant wanting goes away. This is not so obvious to us, but when we start to meditate and actually observe and understand and explore, well, what is this happiness of sense pleasure? We begin to see this. We actually can begin to recognize the wanting itself and see just how unpleasant that wanting is, that feeling of being pulled, the feeling like it's not okay that I don't have this thing. When we get the thing, there's this moment of relief. Oh, it's that relief of having. It's the relief of getting rid of the wanting. It's the sense of, I'm in control. I figured this out. I can do this. I can live my life and make it work. There's all of that coming in that's part of that sense of happiness. And part of the Buddha's proposition to us is that if you take the time to actually observe that wanting, and instead of acting on that wanting, just watch the wanting and see that eventually it goes away, you will experience happiness when that wanting goes away. Actually, a kind of deeper happiness, because it's than the having what we want, because it's not dependent on things outside of us. It is just the release of that wanting. So this is a kind of a non-intuitive kind of happiness for us, that if we can see the releasing of that wanting. Paradoxically, in terms of sense pleasure, in terms of the happiness of sense pleasure, this is another piece that we don't necessarily think about. If we can let go of our usual pattern of wanting around things, our wanting of sense pleasure, our wanting to construct the world to be the way we'd like it, then we're in a space of kind of just accepting what's offered, what's flowing in our experience. There'll be some pleasant experience, some unpleasant experience. And paradoxically, the pleasant in that space of just receiving and being with experience, it's like, think of a time perhaps when you were out in nature and you had very little, to do, and you had all the time in the world, and you were just there in nature and seeing the blue sky and hearing the birds, and how delightful it was to be just in that space. That kind of happiness of being in the world comes when we let go of that wanting. There's a kind of a deeper connection to the realm of simple sense pleasure when we let go of this need to construct and define the world in our usual habitual way. We touch into a kind of a richness to sense experience, a beauty to our experience. So one way to explore this kind of happiness of sense pleasure is just to see, when does that kind of sense pleasure come, when we're not kind of trying to make ourselves construct something? It actually happens to us more than we realize. So just noticing those moments, those simple moments. So the Buddha acknowledged this happiness of sense pleasure, of possessing things. He said, it's most skillful when we don't try to hold on to this, to hold on to possessions. But he acknowledged, he said, that's an interesting phrase. He said, someone possesses wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of one's arms, earned by the sweat of one's brow, righteous wealth righteously gained. When one thinks, I possess wealth acquired in this wholesome way, one experiences happiness. So the recognition of the possibility of gaining possessions for taking care of our families, for taking care of ourselves, there's a happiness in that. He also points to the happiness of that kind of having as leading to a somewhat deeper kind of happiness, the possibility for a deeper kind of happiness. When we have things, he said, part of the happiness that can come from having things is that we can share them. We can have the happiness of generosity. So looking at the happiness of sharing things, of generosity. This is an interesting kind of happiness, and we need to look at our relationship to giving. Sometimes we give things away without thinking about it, or just because we don't need them anymore. We don't need things anymore, taking things that we don't use anymore and giving them to Goodwill or something. There are times when we can find our way into an exploration of generosity. I mean, if you're giving something away like that, actually the Buddha said anytime we're offering something, it's really helpful to connect to the fact, I'm offering something. And so giving something away to Goodwill, it may be helpful to connect to that as an act of generosity. And perhaps making a wish. May somebody have the use of this. May somebody else, have the use of this who wouldn't have had the use of it. He pointed to this he said, even if you're just rinsing out, he was talking to his monks, he said, even if you're just rinsing out your alms bowl after you've eaten a meal and you throw away the rinsings of the pot onto the ground, you might just do that without thinking about it. But he said, even if you do even that gesture with the thought in your mind, may the beings in the vicinity live on that food. That's a way to cultivate this quality of generosity and connection. Generosity connects us to other people. We can donate something to Goodwill and just, not think about it, or we can donate something and think about how it might connect us to other people. That begins to kind of soften the heart, open the heart, connect us. As we explore generosity, it can be that there's one teaching around generosity where it said that if you're conscious of being generous, if you're conscious of giving something away, you can experience joy before you give it away in the act of thinking about giving it away. You can experience joy in the act of giving it away, in the actual giving, And you can experience joy in thinking about having given it away. So this is part of the happiness around generosity, that it can produce this, if we reflect on this connectivity and the fact of offering, we can actually feel this joy. You know, this can happen in really simple ways. I mean, really simple ways. I was on retreat once and somebody had sent me a box, a pound box of See's chocolate. I was on a 3-month retreat and I got I hadn't been checking my mail and I didn't get this until like the last week of the retreat. But here it was, this box, 16-ounce box of chocolate. And what I did with that box of chocolate was I put it out. I took 2 pieces myself. I didn't have to say that. I took 2 pieces myself. But I put the rest of the box out on the counter and just sat there and watched people come and take a piece of chocolate and looked at the expression on their face. And it was so much fun. It was just so much fun to see how happy people were. I mean, they've been on retreat for 3 months. You know, it's like See's chocolate at the end of a 3-month retreat. This was happiness. So, you know, it was just really lovely to connect with seeing that, you know, the happiness of thinking about it. There was happiness in thinking about it. And then happiness in sitting there and watching people come and take their chocolate. And happiness now as I'm describing it to you. So, you know, it bears fruit in this way. To explore happiness. So this giving connects us to others. So it begins to soften our hearts. It opens us up. The happiness comes in a way, I think, from this connection, from seeing other people being happy too, from offering something and seeing it received. You know, knowing that something we're doing is being is offering somebody else some happiness or some joy. In that case, I got a lot of the joy out of seeing the happiness on their face. Some of the happiness also comes from the letting go. That part might not be so clear. But just looking at that. So, you know, you can play with this by practicing giving. You know, finding ways to do this. One time Gil suggested putting $20 in your pocket. That's a, you know, it's $20 is not a small amount of money. It's not a big amount of money, but it's not a small amount of money. And then to just see, you know, with the intention, I'm going to give this away. You know, so you put that $20 in your pocket with the intention, I'm going to give it away. And then see what happens. When does that motivation come? When does that expression come? And feel it. Feel that expression of generosity. Another practice I explored was when I noticed the impulse for generosity, I acted on it rather than squelching it or thinking, oh, it's not the time or it's not the place or how am I going to get that to that person anyway? And I was wandering through a museum store and I saw this little thing that I thought, oh, that would be perfect for the daughter of this friend of mine. And I was doing this practice at that time. So it's like, okay, I bought it with the intention to give it to her. And I had to, you know, do some things to get it to her because she lived in another state. So it was, in fact, part of my mind had said, oh, it's too difficult, you know, it's like I have to get to the post office, I have to do all this stuff. But it was like, no, I decided to act on that. I decided to follow through on that movement of generosity when it arose. So that's another way to explore the happiness of generosity. Another kind of happiness that comes through this connectivity with others is the happiness of non-harming, the happiness of engaging ethically in the world, skillfully in the world, behaving compassionately, kindly, with a non-harming intention to others. When we do things that cause harm, some part of us often does feel remorse or regret. And there's a, you know, it feels off to us often when we do something that causes harm. You know, that there's some part of us that feels, yeah, that wasn't right. And so when we do engage in harming, we sense the remorse of that. In non-harming, if we engage in non-harming, the Buddha says that we experience the bliss of blamelessness as a kind of happiness. Now, this kind of happiness does take connecting to the fact that you're not harming. That can just kind of go by us. You know, it's like driving down the freeway. You know, I try to drive carefully. And at times I remember to connect with this and think, I'm driving carefully and I'm protecting myself and I'm protecting others. This is an offering I'm giving to the people who are driving around me. And that brings some gladness into my heart when I think about it that way, when I connect to that. And so the bliss of blamelessness, the happiness of non-remorse, comes when we actually reflect on, how am I acting skillfully? When am I behaving in ways that are non-harming? When we behave in ways that are non-harming, we often don't actually consciously recognize that. There's a lot of time we're engaging in non-harming behavior. A lot of the time. Like, you've been sitting here for the last 45 minutes not harming people. Can you appreciate that? You know, can you recognize that? Not just in the times where it's like, you know, we see our urge to harm somebody or, you know, urge to speak out and say something and then go, no, no, don't do that, you know. That, we can take appreciation in that as well, but we can also take appreciation in the fact that we spend a lot of our time with this, non-harming. If we can connect to that as an intention, it can bring joy into our hearts. So this exploration of the bliss of blamelessness. I'm going to read you a little poem that the Buddha said. This is in the same sutta that he was talking about the happiness of possession. He talks about the happiness of possession, the happiness of enjoyment, the happiness of debtlessness, and then the happiness of blamelessness. He says, having known the bliss of debtlessness and further the bliss of possession, enjoying the bliss of enjoyment, a mortal then sees with wisdom. But while seeing with wisdom, the wise one knows both shares of one's happiness. The other is not worth a 16th part of the bliss that comes from blamelessness. So he says that the happiness that comes from possession, from generosity, from sharing our wealth, the happiness that comes from not being in debt, is not worth a 16th part of the bliss of blamelessness. That happiness that comes from non-harming is a deeper kind of happiness. It's a subtler kind of happiness. It's not one that we recognize so much. So it takes a little bit of attuning to begin to connect with that bliss of blamelessness. And connecting to the happiness of generosity, the happiness of non-harming, is the happiness of the open-hearted connection with others. This happiness of love, of kindness, of caring, of compassion, of joy with the joy of others. This is an area that, you know, a lot of our movement towards happiness, another one of the big ways that we think we want to find happiness in our lives, or we think we'll have happiness, is if somebody loves us. I certainly had this. This was, you know, I was looking for somebody to love me. I wanted to be loved. I thought that's how I would find happiness. It's finding someone to love me. And And what I discovered, at some point I was exploring a non-requited love relationship. I was feeling the pull in my heart to want to be loved by this person, and you know, feeling the kind of the pull to, you know, I was feeling feelings for this person that were clearly not returned. So it's like my first inclination was like, well, these feelings aren't appropriate then. I'm not supposed to feel these feelings if this person doesn't return those feelings. But I was exploring this whole complex of feelings, and at some point there was a little release in my mind, and I recognized there was some fear about what I was feeling. And some part of my mind said, what are you afraid of? Why are you afraid of these feelings? And as the mind saw that, it let go of the fear around feeling what I was feeling. And what happened was that I felt this really open-hearted wish for happiness for this other person. This love just poured out of me for this other person that didn't need anything back. And that moment was actually a really key moment for me in my practice, because what I discovered in that moment, what my mind, what I said to myself in that moment is, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for. This feeling is what I've been looking for. This feeling of loving others is what I've been looking for. It doesn't need anything back. So this is a real radical shift of our perspective on love. The possibility of loving without needing to be loved. It's a beautiful, beautiful emotion. And I don't live in that space. I mean, I don't live there. So, you know, having had that experience, kind of as the example, the question before, you know, I went back to some of my other habits, you know, looking for people to approve me, to like me, etc. But there was something about that shift of recognizing that what had uncovered there was the delusion of looking for what I was looking for from somebody else. I realized that what I was looking for was already here. It was possible to find it here without having something from somebody else. And so it just really reoriented my search. Rather than trying to find things from others, it became more of the inward journey. So this exploration, the happiness of the open heart, the happiness of love, not of being loved, but of loving. It's a beautiful, beautiful kind of happiness. It's more deeply satisfying than having anything. I've got several more happinesses to go through. I don't see how I'm going to get through them all. Then there's a kind of a happiness of practice, a happiness of concentration that comes with the exploration of meditation. And this one the Buddha pointed to as being, a very beautiful kind of peace and happiness, bliss. That as we settle our minds, concentrate our minds, come into stillness, this is a completely different form of happiness. Most of the others that I've been talking about earlier had to do with in the world, being in the world. This one is turning more inward. The happiness of concentration is kind of the mind, I guess one way to put it is that the mind and body really like being paid attention to. It's kind of like I was talking about a little while ago, you know, we want to get attention from other people. If we start paying attention to ourselves in this very intimate way of being with our experience moment after moment, the mind and body really like this kind of attention. It's like the whole being, the whole body, every cell in the body feels nourished by this kind of attention. And it's like the whole body says, yes, give me more of that, please. It's like it's just getting something. It's like it's been thirsty for so long, and it's just drinking it up. Now that's the way it feels to me, at least, this sense of you know, real nourishment, this happiness of concentration. It's just like the body and mind are getting a kind of attention that they haven't had and that they've been looking for. It's a very deep kind of happiness. One of the supports this kind of happiness offers us is the kind of the happiness. We see this kind of happiness as being it doesn't need anything from outside. We don't have to get anything. In fact, that concentration is about letting go, not about having things. We think when we first start meditating, perhaps, that concentration is something that we get, we gain it. And there are things that we can do to support concentration arising, but we don't create concentration. It arises in certain conditions, and those conditions are largely about letting go. Letting go of distraction, letting go of fear, letting go of confusion, letting go of greed, letting go, letting go, letting go. As we let go of those things, the mind naturally comes into stillness and quiet. And in that stillness and quiet is a very happy place. And this kind of happiness, it supports us seeing that the letting go of things brings us into yet a deeper kind of happiness. So it kind of gives us a stepping stone from moving from wanting things in the world, having to like construct our lives to have all these things, to realizing, well, that's actually a lesser kind of happiness. When we begin to touch into the happiness of concentration, we get that so deeply. It's like, yeah, having stuff in the world, that's, yeah, it's a little bit of happiness, but this is much deeper kind of happiness. A more subtle kind of happiness comes with, as we let go, as we explore. I mean, we can get attached to that kind of happiness of concentration almost as much as we can get attached to, if not more, get attached to things in the world. It's like almost our habit of wanting, our habit of craving happiness gets replaced from things in the world to wanting to have this state of bliss in our minds. And fortunately, in some ways, the way our mind and body is put together, the more we want that concentration, the harder it is to get. So we have to learn to let go. We have to learn to let go. And that's I talked about that earlier, that there's a happiness of letting go of wanting. And this is in the terrain of happiness of insight, that we start to see that that letting go, that non-reactivity, things as they are, so things are happening. We like things, we don't like things, things are pleasant, things are unpleasant. If we can learn the letting go of wanting to hold on to the pleasant, wanting to get rid of the unpleasant, we find our way into a space of the happiness of non-reactivity. A happiness that comes with kind of aligning ourselves with, this is the way it is right now. It's like this. There's a happiness that comes with aligning ourselves with the truth of things as they are. The happiness of non-reactivity. There's also a happiness of non-suffering. This is one of the most subtle forms of happiness. And this actually happens to us a lot too, but we don't recognize it. We don't suffer a lot, but we don't notice that we're not suffering. So for instance, imagine if you had a broken leg. You've got a cast on, you've got crutches. Think about what you'd have to do. You have to, like, get yourself out of bed, find your crutches, maybe, you know, find your way into the bathroom and figure out how to bathe yourself with your cast, this cast on your leg, and figure out how to get yourself into the kitchen and, you know, with crutches, figuring out hopping around to make breakfast. I mean, how do you get to work? I mean, maybe you have to call somebody, ask them to drive you to work. There's a struggle around having that broken leg. And then imagine, in an instant, if that broken leg were gone. Essentially, what happens there is that the suffering of that goes away. That's the happiness of non-suffering. You can kind of get a sense of how happy it would be to not have that suffering. We have a lot of that kind of non-suffering. And again, we don't notice it. We don't recognize it. So this may be a place of making some reflection, you know. Okay, yeah, I've got a house perhaps, or I've got food enough to eat. These are kinds of non-suffering. There's kind of a way that we have a belief that when things are good, or that things, when we're in a place of really liking things, or really being excited, or enthusiastic about something, that's good and that's the way it's supposed to be. Or if there's things bad happening, that's a problem and we have to fix it or change it. But we're not so attuned to, you know, we're really kind of attuned to the highs and the lows. We're not so attuned to this middle ground of no problem. There's just no problem. There's so much no problem happening for us. Can you actually connect with that? And notice that. There's certain times that can be helpful to check into this. Transition times. When you finish one thing and move on to the next. Like, finish a meal before you get up from the meal and move on to the next thing. What is it like to be in the space of, you know, you're not hungry anymore, so there's no problem about hunger there. Now, what is that space like? Or after you've taken a shower, you know, you're clean and you're, you know, before you get on to the next thing. So in moments when we're transitioning between things can be an interesting place to check into this possibility of seeing no problem here. There's no particular problem here. We create problems by saying, oh, this is the next thing I have to do. But in that moment, before we pick up that mental inclination, what is it like to not have a problem for that split second? And I should probably stop now. It's 9:00, so I hope that this was useful for you. I'm sorry we didn't have time for questions at the end. Thank you.